reaching a grandstand finish. And Frampton now is really digging in. Good work from the Irishman, but back comes Warrington. A very special fight. It could be spectacular. Dunair can bang. Frampton might have to produce an absolutely vintage performance. Making Dunair miss and then punishing him.
Oh, he got it again.
Big left hand from Dunair.
Have a chin and a half.
Frampton again takes the power of Nonito Dunair.
Oh, I'm holding on. Come on, son.
The man to your right. It's been talked about him fighting you. You feel like you're ready to fight for a world title and try to make history for Ireland.
Absolutely, and I know he's a champ. I just want to fight for a world title next. I want to be involved in big fights. And I would love the opportunity to fight Jamel.
Hi, I'm Chris Lloyd, and over the next few weeks on Inside Fighting, we're going to take you inside Carl Frampton's camp ahead of one of the biggest fights of his career. He stands on the brink of joining an elite group of UK fighters and becoming a three-weight world champion, and Inside Fighting will bring you exclusive, unprecedented access in these final few weeks. We'll hear from the characters driving the Frampton machine, sparring partners, friends, family, trainers, and part-time comedians Jamie Moore and Nigel Travis, and of course, plenty from the main man himself. You won't miss a beat of the build-up with us, brought to you by 32 Red. You can watch episodes on YouTube, Facebook, and keep up to speed on our Twitter and Instagram pages at Inside Fighting. Please remember to like and subscribe, and welcome to the show.
This is a huge fight. I'm a bit surprised, actually. The bookies have me slight favourite. I thought I was going to go into the fight with the bookies as an underdog. I'm slightly surprised that I'm a favourite in the fight, according to the bookmakers. But it's a fight that, I don't know, I'm just really, really up for this fight. You're always up for a fight, aren't you? But there's something different about this one. This is, to become a three-weight world champion, that's big. That's huge. So, one foot in the Hall of Fame. The island of Ireland's greatest ever fighter. And I think, you know, people have me in that conversation already, but I'm happy to be in that conversation, but I would say it myself, I'm the best fighter that these shores have ever produced if I become a three-weight world champion. One of the only Brits to ever do it. Do you know the other ones?
Ricky Burns.
Yeah. Duke McKenzie and Bob Fitzsimmons.
Nice. Oh, you're getting back some, aren't
you? Yeah, so I'd be the fourth one. And I'd say, without doing a disservice to Burns or Duke McKenzie's, mine would be a better one than theirs. Bob Fitzsimmons was three-weight world champion back then when there was only about fucking eight weight divisions. It's insane. But, you know, you're putting yourself in the bracket as one of the best ever British fighters as well. It's a huge fight for me. Yeah, there only is big fights. The next time I lose, I'm retiring. Like, I'm not gonna hang about it. I'm in this game to become a world champion again. That's the only reason why I decided to continue after the Warrington fight. And I'm now in a position with my next fight coming up with the chance to become a world champion again and fulfill another dream. So that's what I want to do, and that's the only reason why I'm fighting.
Well, American Jamel Herring is the man who stands in the way. A resident of Cincinnati in Ohio, he's the reigning WBO super featherweight world champion. He's got only two defeats in a 24-fight, nearly decade-long career. In December, without a fight date confirmed, Carl began his camp heading from Belfast to Liverpool on the ferry. Over in Manchester, his trainer Nigel Travis set off at the crack of dawn to pick him up, and I went on the journey with him.
Just after 5 a.m, we're picking the wee man up, going and getting him from Birkenhead. So he comes in a star week, stays here usually a couple of weeks depending on how long he's been home, what appointments we've got going on and how far he can, but obviously we're quite far out, plenty of time. There's the three of them coming over, so hopefully they'll have had a proper night's sleep and he'll be ready to go.
Who else is coming over?
Anthony Kakachi, he's coming over for the first time, he's a sparring partner, and Big Stevie Ward.
Why is it your job to come and pick him up?
I'm in the cheap seat.
I think it's just safer travelling on the boat, although it takes 9 hours. It's a slow boat from Belfast to Liverpool, overnight boat. It's an absolute pain in the arse. But I do it because I can go and keep myself to myself in a cabin. I feel like the risk of picking up COVID is decreased.
Here we are. This is the room. This is a bed here as well. And this is a bed so you can sleep four people. Sometimes you don't even have that. You just have a drawing on the wall, which looks like a window.
We get off in Liverpool, scrape at dawn, having probably, if you're sleeping for 3 or 4 hours on that boat, you've done well. So you're always pretty tired when you get off it, and either Nigel or Jamie is there to pick us up, and it's great to see a familiar face.
What's happening?
Are you docking imminently? That means soon.
I was docked. I know what it means, you silly bastard.
Nigel's one of the best guys I know. He's one of these people, he would do anything for anyone. Selfless, very charitable. I imagine that if people meet him, when you meet him for the first time, you'd probably think he's a bit of a dickhead, but he's not.
Are you there already?
Obviously. I don't fuck around, do I, eh? We're here on time, obviously.
You never, not normally.
Oh, bollocks. I'll tell you what, walk, you bastard.
Jamie's another great man, and again, salt of the earth like Nigel. Charitable, selfless. That's, both of them are very similar in that way. They're different characters, but there's a lot of similarities too. Jamie's like calmed down now. He's like a calmer version of Nigel, but with the same morals. And he's helped me a lot. He's a real family man, as is Nigel. They're just good people. They're a team, and it's like Batman and Robin.
Who's Batman?
Jamie's Batman, obviously. Has to be. Maybe not Batman Robin. Laurel and Hardy.
He just knows the fact that he introduced me to Scrabble. Now, because I've learned to play it properly.
Bullshit.
I'm getting better and better.
Bullshit.
And he's fucking now calling me a cheat because he can't beat me. Oh, he's cheating, you fucking big fanny. I don't, honestly.
Some creepy shit going on, though.
What do you mean?
Well,
because they've got a few seven-letter words. Oh,
not a few. He gets two a game at least.
No, no.
I'm like, what? Bullshit.
I fucking wish he did.
Shut up. Good. So, his hands are high, very tight, and he's coming. So I'd be hitting him here first, and then bring it to the middle.
He's dangerous in the pocket with him, because he throws that fucking left downstairs really well. Yeah. I don't think he'd be as dangerous with heading. But he can't really set them wrists here now.
Right, can you two tell us how this friendship came about?
Oh, we're not friends. Sorry. Is that the illusion? Am I supposed to be... listen. No joking aside, I know I'm an actor and a very good one, but I can't do that. I can't pretend to be something that I'm not. I mean, what do you take me for? Fucking hell, man.
No, he's right.
Let's just call it acquaintances.
I can't stand him, but who the fuck am I going to take the piss out of?
our wives are best friends. That's the...
Right, let's do a quick flick through. Yeah. So we met at Oliver's, we sparred. I actually seen him just once before that. He lost the split to Wayne Pinder on an amateur show. Then we sparred. Then he started to come down Oliver's regular. I got married 2004. Nige came with his wife, Susie, but my wife and his wife didn't know each other then. That was 2004. And then my wife and his wife sort of started becoming acquainted. Then we went to Amir Khan's fight when he got beat off Brady's Prescott in Manchester. We went out for a night out afterwards. And then the rest is history. So they've been best mates ever since, and I've had to put up with him.
And we're acquaintances.
So you both sparred when you were younger, but you've got very different versions of events. So can you tell me exactly what happened in this spar?
Jamie asked me to go down sparring. I pushed his head in, we became friends. That's the long and short of it.
That's not exactly how it happened. So basically, he turned up in the gym for sparring with his dad, because he thought,
okay, I didn't turn up for the gym. It was arranged. I need to redress it. That means then I'll go back to the situation.
No one told me. We turned up with his dad. Turned up with his dad in case, because he knew he was going to get filled in. He thought, I'll take my dad just to back me up. And so I thought it was pretty rude to turn up without before telling me. So I then proceeded to punch his fucking head in, which was probably one of my greatest achievements in boxing, because it felt so good. Probably better than lifting the Lonsdale belt.
You on the tube?
I had a video
somewhere. You on the tube? You on the tube?
I had a video somewhere of him walking back to the corner after the first round like he was walking on a mattress. That's the only way you can describe it. He sort of went like the corner's there and he sort of went like that. Going back. And I had a video somewhere. It was fucking amazing.
You on the tube? Not far off.
I went to Jamie's gym. I did an arrangement because Jamie's old amateur coach was my old amateur coach, Dave Langhorn. And I was going in the ABAs and he said, some come sparring down at Oliver's for Jamie. So he arranged it and I went down there. And he said that I didn't arrange it. Dave arranged it, I didn't. Went down there. I went down there in like sweat gear. Genuinely sweat gear. Turtleneck jumper, the lot. And the heat, like I've never felt. I've never been as hot like it. Got in the ring, and they had heaters like these, and I melted. And
it reminded me of him of dodgeball.
In fairness, he punched me head in for three rounds, in fact four rounds, and punched holes in his right. So then Oliver said, "Why don't you come back down and spar?" I said, "I'd love to." And then the week after, I went back down.
I put jam and butter on them. Oh, seriously, I put bread, butter and jam on that, and he ate them all day. Bang, bang, bang. And then that was it. That was the start of it.
The God's honest truth is, he slipped a shot the other day messing about on the pads, and it was the first time he's ever slipped a shot in his fucking life.
So he's getting his time and distance better now here with his jab.
Perfect. I like to do this job because I know how difficult being a fighter is. Me and Nige as a team make it that little bit more enjoyable and easier for the fighter to do the hardest job. So the people who we're working with being amazing people makes my job easier. So when I get up in the morning and I'm tired and I've just had six fights on the bounce one weekend after the other and I've not seen my family hardly, and I'm thinking, God, I could do with a week off. And then I think, well, Carl's over this week and he's away from his family. And I know what it means to him if he can win a world title at third weight division. So their aspirations and motivations motivate me. And then I think, Carl's a beautiful person. Carl deserves to win a world title at third weight. I know how much it'd mean to him. So those things then pass on to me.
Beautiful, much better. When you see his body language start to fall in and you've been having it, take that little half step back and get it long. And then as soon as he opens up to come long, then get short.
I'd never really met Carl until he came across and he sort of was trialing out at the gym just to see whether he wanted to come over and train. But from the first time you meet him, you sort of, you feel his positive energy, you feel that warmth and you sort of get that good vibe and like I say, it's not something really you can put your finger on. It's just there.
Back this way. And just touch me there.
You can feel the class, you know, that sharpness, that crispness. His feet are amazing. One of his best assets is his feet, his judgment of timing and distance. His jab's phenomenal, his hand speed. So yeah, I mean, you can tell a good fighter and a world-class fighter, you know, and there is a difference. And, you know, there's sometimes you might have a world-class asset, but your all-round game isn't all that. But Carl seems to tick more or less every box.
So the last time I was in Manchester, there was a story that broke about eight former England rugby players who were suffering from early onset of dementia. Now, they're taking legal action against World Rugby and the RFU and pushing for huge reforms to be made to the game. It's a big story in sport and it bled over into boxing that weekend with some very prominent sports journalists calling for boxing to be abolished. Now, the story broke the morning that I arrived with Carl at the VIP gym in Astley. Nigel Travis picks up the story.
The head journalist from the Times called Matt Dickinson. Apparently, he was slagging off boxing as such. All his article was how boxing's too violent and he can't spend his Saturday evenings doing it. And the tone of the article was the good things that boxing does are not outweighed by the negatives that it has on concussion, dementia, and people getting hurt. And I took offence to it and invited him down. And in fairness to him, he came. So you came and saw the meeting as such, and he basically, I was worried because you journalists can, you know, change the truth, I suppose. You know, they can make it, they can celebritize certain things, and I just didn't, I was a bit worried, but I was also not, I was also honest and just told him the truth. And he came down and it was received quite well. Didn't change his mind, I don't think. Deep down, he's still probably anti-boxing. Maybe he's always been anti-boxing, I don't know. He was a football journalist, you know, liked, you know, motor racing, like, loved other sports. And I was basically questioning the fact that things like, at the moment, with the pandemic going on, support's being given to many, many sports, motor racing, horse racing, rugby union, badminton, to name but a few. And amateur boxing has not received anything, which I find repulsive. And the good that boxing does, without doubt, outweighs the negative elements of it, which there are some. And again, we're not ignorant to dismiss what does go on in the sport. But the positives that my gym certainly has far outweigh any negatives that could happen. And we're saving lives on a daily basis. So that's what happened. And it was put in the paper and well received. So I'm happy about that. Never thought I'd get in the Times. Apart from the criminal column, maybe, but. Oh. No one sees amateur boxing. They don't see this. They come into the boxing club, and at the door, I say, "Can you do that?" And they always say, "Yes, I can." And from that day forward, they'll address me as coach forever. So his journey. Is my goal. It's the overview of boxing being a violent sport, being a barbaric, all those false analogies, I believe. What I do is I ensure that I have the safeguards that they don't spar, they don't box for a long time. That's me holding it.
I'm sure I could find it. I don't know what the concussion protocols are in amateur boxing.
The exposure to getting hurt, you know, I believe is quite minimal. Very, very rarely does it happen. In juniors, in amateur boxing, even less so than professional boxing. And the fact that they're in this gym, I know the danger out there. I know the danger that they're in out there by living a certain life, by carrying a certain implement, by being part of a certain group. So if I can get them out of that, then I'm winning. Then the world's a better place. And if the world's a better place, I'm happier. One, two, left up. Come on, again. Finish backhand. Again. Jab. Slip, slip. People who think the negatives from boxing are outweighed by the positives are ridiculous. It really is. And you can see in there, you can see a gym full of kids who are changing their lives. They think they're going to change their lives. Hopefully, it'll be the next Anthony Joshua or Canelo Alvarez. They want to be that kid. That journey to become that person who they want to be. Their lives will change, you know, unrecognisably, and they'll be better people for it. So I'm proud of that. You can see, you know, with your own eyes, the fact that you got girls training with boys, training with, you know, different races, cultures, sexualities. No one gives a toss. I've got winners, and every one of them is a winner because they're not doing what they could be doing somewhere else.
You look at the stuff that Nigel Travis does, like the guy literally, and you know, people joke about this in the gym, but he doesn't sleep. Sometimes he would do a night shift, not sleep, come into the gym, train the pros, maybe go home and get an Irish kip, and he'd be down in Mosshead training the local amateurs. Jamie Moore as well has just recently opened an amateur club in Walkden, and he wants to give back in a way that will help the young kids, and boxing has certainly helped Jamie. I think if you read Jamie's book and he talk about you, he was a bit of a naughty boy when he was a young lad, but I think because of boxing, it potentially pulled him away from a life of crime or doing other things like that. And I think that he sees the great value that the local amateur boxing clubs have. So these boys are really giving back. They don't have a lot of time. They've got their own families, but they're always thinking about other people and they're always giving back.
Later that evening, I headed over to Ancoats, to the flat which Carl, Anthony Kakachi and Stephen Ward are renting during this camp. Now, the lads had some dinner, debated Carl's net worth, which was good fun, and discussed what it would take for them to fight a YouTuber after Jake Paul called out Conor McGregor earlier on that day.
Did you see this, Jake Paul?
Griefing Conor McGregor. Cheeky bastard. See if I was McGregor, see what he said about his missus.
That's what I was going to say.
And I think he's a type as well, would chin him if he'd just seen him rather than fucking fight him. Obviously he's trying to make a fight. When you start slobbering about people's fucking birds and all.
So much he's offering him, 15 million.
I wonder what that then end up happening for the money and your man gets to chin him. Beat him up.
Like offering Conor McGregor 15 million to fight in Egypt, like that, you'd snap at.
Fucking right.
His whiskey company's massive now, isn't it? Like it's near a billion, they're saying.
Probably beating up old dudes in a bar right now, or maybe you're jacking off because you're sick of fucking your wife. I mean, she's a four, Connor. You can do a lot better. But happy Monday. My team sent you a $50 million offer this morning. $50 million cash, proof of funds, the biggest fight offer.
What's
you've
all
ever
these been fucking YouTube doing? It's annoying me now. It's really annoying me.
Would you fight them?
Nah.
No, 50 million.
No. Don't. Who could have fought? Barry McGuigan. See you on YouTube. Fern Troyer. What about Carlton out of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Alfonso Rivera.
Yeah, good to him. I'd fucking batter him too. That's an official call out.
Apart from net worth, what do you think it is?
I know what it is. What
on
it is.
No, what is on it?
I don't know.
You're worth 900.
900 grand, a million. $1 million.
Wouldn't get out of bed for that.
Oh, what a mom.
Deliveroo lad is a shoe, mate.
There's a door open, mate.
My wife's 35. No, it's a toy boy, she has. It's a MILF.
I think I'm a DILF.
I think I'm definitely a DILF, mate, 100%.
I would put myself in the DILF bracket. I would. Would you?
I don't know.
Why are you scratching your nose looking at me?
No! I wasn't even mean it. I was actually thinking about, am I a DILF? I have to be a DILF. Like.
Carl loves himself, he thinks he's a DILF.
Where'd he go?
Colour and cheat for who? Rossa?
Me?
He's doing colour and cheats?
I'd be doing about four colour and cheats every day, Dad.
Why is that?
Mr. Long loves it.
Does he?
I don't know.
Look at me. Very good.
I worry about her. I worry about the kids. I worry about all kids. I think this whole thing and the schooling that's happening, like, you know, I'm lucky that Christine is capable and she's a clever girl, but homeschooling with Christine with two kids isn't the same as being in school. And no matter how bright you are, it's just not the same. Christine's not a teacher. But what about the kids who don't have capable parents? Or the kids who have parents who don't give a fuck? Or the kids, or the parents who have maybe four kids that they have to look after? What are they going to do? Like, how much is this affecting our education? How much is this affecting future job opportunities and potential schools, whether they get into grammar schools or secondary schools, better schools or worse schools? I just worried about the kids. I really am.
I'm already in bed.
I know. Where's Claudia?
Oh, she's way out, friend.
Is she?
Right. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to go over here, all right?
All right.
See you later, kid.
Yeah.
Love you loads.
Bye.
Peace out.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Carl, genuine question here.
Yeah. Truth.
Do you reckon you're a DILF?
Come on, be honest.
Sure,
you need to be honest.
Honestly?
Yeah, honestly.
All right.
Yeah.
More so through my celebrity status, but.
What do you mean? Because you got money?
I'm good looking. I'm a bit short, like, but I'm alright looking.
We're not debating that.
So, what are you saying?
You know, we were talking about it when you were away.
Steely reckons he's a dolph.
Hang on, my dolph.
I reckon I'm a dolph.
Why do you screw your face up and learn me?
You're like fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Do you think Anthony's a dolph?
Anthony's got nice eyes.
That's it,
man. Isn't it?
Fucking good looking bastard. Everything,
the bone structure and
everything about the bone structure. It's the Uncle Albert beard.
Oh, what a knob.
As the sun set over Manchester, day one of a long camp came to a close. Next time we head to Belfast as Carl spends some final time with his family. He and I commentate over Zoom on Stephen Ward's fight against Hathor Bjornsson from Game of Thrones, and we find out how good Carl is at cooking dinner with the kids. A reminder that you can watch these episodes on Inside Fighting's YouTube channel. Please remember to like, comment and subscribe. There'll also be plenty of content on the Inside Fighting Facebook, Twitter and Instagram pages as well. Our thanks to 32 Red for partnering with us for this project. Join us for episode 2 next weekend.